We're in 1 Samuel 23. We're going to focus mainly on verses 1 through 5. When Pastor gave this to me and he said 1 Samuel 23 and he only gave me the verses 1 through 5, I kind of looked at him. I was like, I'm only, going to talk about five verses. Like, that's all I, we're not going to go over the whole chapter, a quick overview. And then the more you get to digging into those first five verses, I understood why. Real quick, when I was going through this. So first, let's set the scene here of what's happening right now in 1 Samuel 23, verses 1 through 5. So at this point, David and his men, 600 of them, they're in the forest of Herith. Also want to say, if I mispronounce some of these words as we go through here, please forgive me. And if y'all know the correct pronunciation, you can tell me. But they're in the forest of Herith. That's 10 miles east of Calah. All right. We need to know where Calah is because that's what we're going to be talking about here. So now, for the city of Calah, it's a border town of Judea. It is 12 miles from the Philistine city of Gath. All right? And we all know the Philistines, but it's important to know that it's only 12 miles from the Philistine city of Gath. All right? And with it being so close that it makes it very vulnerable for the Philistine army to come during the harvest season and try to take everything that they have, all right? And when you think about harvest season, we think about growing things and spending all our time. I mean, I know for myself at my house, I have a big fence, 10-foot fence around my garden to keep the deer out. I tried it the first year and it ate everything we had there, right? So I'm going to protect, my garden so we can have that harvest, all right, of the stuff that we plant. I mean, if you think about hay, when people cut hay, they don't just leave it in the field where the cows are, right? They move it or isolate it to where it's not taken by the cows. They feed it to them as it's needed. Also, when you think of our grain, once we grow and harvest grain, we keep those in silos, okay, or in big buildings. So we're protecting our harvest right there. Well, Saul is so worried about tracking and finding David that he has no one in the city of Calah to protect them at this time. All right? So he is now taking his focus away from being a leader and taking care of his people and their harvest, that instead he is so focused on trying to find David and get David that he basically does away with his duties of protecting the city to have all of them go to try to track David down. All right? So that's an important part to understand right here before we get to our verses. All right? So when you think about this and what Saul should be doing as a leader, he should be protecting his communities, right? All right? And so when we think about who are leaders, right? In my mind, the first thing that pops up is a president, right? Or a leader of a country when we think about leaders, all right? Or you would think of somebody that runs a big company. All right, those are leaders. That's what we think of as leaders. But the part that hit me when we were talking about leaders here is, if you look at David, who was David? David was just a shepherd boy, right? That the Lord is now going to call to be a great leader. All right? I think of Abraham Lincoln, and if any of y'all know Abraham Lincoln's story when he was young, I mean, they lived in Kentucky and then they had to move out into the woods of Indiana, and he lived there, and his mother died, and he had a stepmom, and his dad was ruled out in the rule in the farmlands right there, and by society standards, he never should have turned into a great president that overturned basically one of the largest black eyes that ever could have happened in our country, right? All right? I think of my dad in the same manner, grew up in a very poor, my grandmother had to make his clothes. Society would say that he would never amount to anything, but he wound up being a superintendent of three school systems. You know what I mean? So who can be a leader? God can make anybody to be a leader, right? God can make anybody. Technically, all of us sitting in this room right now, he's chosen for all of us to be leaders, because who's the leader of a household? Us men. All right, we're the leader of a household. So anybody can be a leader, but we got to make sure that our leaders are what? Here to protect our community, whether that community to be your household or outside of that community. Pastor gave me this packet, and it had this thing in here, and I'm going to read it to you, which struck me as we were going through this, talking about leaders, all right? And there's a recurring theme that comes throughout all of David's story. And it's the obligation of those who have the ability to assist those in need. All right? So it's talking about leaders or people that have the ability to assist others that are in need. All right? When we become aware of people's adversities affecting our community or themselves, our responsibility is to act and address them. All right? That's what leaders do. All right? The title that came to me when talking about this, we say that's what leaders do. In my opinion, that's just doing the right thing. You're just doing what's right. And that's what I came with and what the Lord placed on me of stood out as the title of what we're going to move through, looking through these first five verses, is just doing the right thing. All right? Or doing what is right. No matter what people say or think or go against it, it is just doing the right thing. All right? So now let's look here at verses 1 through 5, and then we'll go back through each one of these verses. So going through, starting of chapter 23, verses 1 through 5 here, it says, "Then they told David, saying, Behold, the Philistines fight against Keilah, and they rob the threshing floors. Therefore David inquired of the Lord, saying, Shall I go and smite these Philistines? And the Lord said unto David, Go and smite the Philistines and save Keilah. And David's men said unto him, Behold, we be afraid here in Judea. How much more than if we come to Keilah, against the armies of the Philistines? Then David inquired of the Lord yet again, and the Lord answered him and said, Arise and go down to Keilah, and I will deliver the Philistines into thine hand. So David and his men went to Keilah and fought with the Philistines and brought away their cattle and smote them with great slaughter. So David saved the inhabitants of Keilah." Right, so now let's go back up here and look at verse 1. Right, if we look at it, the first thing they say is, then they told David. Well, who is they? Who is they in that? Well, David has spies that has been out going around. Also Saul did, right? So the spies that are out looking to see where maybe Saul and his men are or what's going on, those are the ones that have come back to David right here. All right, and they have told him that the Philistines are now coming to fight in Keilah and they are going to rob their threshing floors. All right, well, I had to figure out what threshing floors was because I had zero clue what that was. All right, if y'all may know, y'all are one step ahead of me. I'm looking through what I consider to be the Bible dictionary trying to figure out what threshing floors are. And it says smooth. Well, I'm just as lost at this current moment as I was when I started. All right, so I had to call Pastor, and I'm like, Pastor, I have no idea what threshing floors is. Does this mean that they went in and just wiped the whole city like out? But it says they're robbing. So basically they're there and they're robbing all of their harvest, all right, and making everything smooth. We know the Philistines, those are some ugly characters, right? They go in, they're ruthless. They're going to do whatever and take whatever they want. All right, remember, Saul has those men that would be there to protect them out looking for David right now. So now let's look at David's train of thought of what's going on and kind of think about it as ourselves. So David, who's on the run trying to save his life, right, that's what he's doing right now. I've never been in that situation. I don't know if any of y'all have ever been in that situation of where you've been on the run trying to save your life. The last thing I'm probably going to worry about is someone else during that time. Not David. David gets this message of when he's running for his life, and he's like, oh, this is what I do. These are my people. Right? So David's there running for his life, all right? But still has the heart for others. That is hard for me to even comprehend. It's one thing for us to sit here and say, oh, I would do the same thing, but I've never been in that situation for me to accurately tell you if that's what I would do. But David's given us a great example of that. All right? David didn't allow that saying to come in one ear and go out the other. I mean, how many times have we had something come to us and we think of that not being a bigger deal? I got bigger fish to fry. I can't tell you how many times I've said that. Well, I can't worry about that right now. I got bigger fish to fry. All right? In my opinion, this would be an example of when I might say, you know what? I can't worry about Keilah right now. I got bigger fish to fry. All right? Not David there. All right? So no matter what we're going through, if we're going to be leaders, which we all are, all right, and we're going to go help people when they're in adverse times and do what is right, all right, not worrying about what we should or supposed to be doing, doing what is right because the Lord has called us there. And then what is the first thing that David does? He doesn't let the thought go out of his head. What is the first thing David does, then getting in verse 2? He inquired of the Lord. Immediately inquired of the Lord. Pray to the Lord right there, asking him, what is it that he should do with this information? I wish I had that in myself all the time when that happened. I wish I did that. And immediately when I read this, it made me think of Brother David from the prayer advance, and I cannot think of his last name. Gibbs, thank you, David Gibbs. Immediately thought of David Gibbs, and all he talked about was his grandfather that said he lacked. No matter how big the situation was, no matter how small the situation was, and he was not going through a situation like this of where somebody he's fearing for his life. All right, but no matter what, he asked the Lord because he lacked. So obviously David is showing us here that he is human and he is lacking knowledge and wisdom of what he should do in this situation. All right? So he prays to the Lord. All right? He didn't use his own human feelings because one of two things is going to happen. The fight or flight sense is going to come into play right here. Either I'm going right now and I'm going to fight these Philistines, or you know what? I got bigger fish to fry and I'm going to leave. All right? It's what David is talking about. But no, what does David do? He prays. He asks for the Lord's guidance in this situation of what he should do, all right, with the Philistines coming into Keilah there. All right? So, David's given us the example here as leaders that no matter what faces us, we should always go to the Lord and ask Him how to handle. No matter how small or how big the situation is, we should go. If y'all are like me, I'm real good at going to the Lord when there's a large situation. Okay? But when it's something small, I rely on myself and think that I can handle it, which is wrong. Right? Which is wrong. Because I think I know, and I do not. I think I do, but I do not. All right? And I got to believe y'all have had an example or an instance where y'all have been in that same situation. All right? I mean, I can remember so many times of something large that has come up, and I just pray and pray and pray for it, and then it's almost like I kind of feel guilty because why am I only praying to Him about the big things? Why am I not praying to Him about the small things? Which, if you're asking me, this is an example of a big thing. Right? You're on the run for your life, and now you're going to try to save a city. All right, that's a big thing. All right? And now, in verse 3, we're going to see a very human side of David and every one of his 600 men. All right? Verse 3, it says, as David's men said unto him, behold, we be afraid here in Judea. I can relate to that. I would probably be afraid as well. We're on the run trying to save you, always constantly looking over our shoulder, all right? My senses are always up. I'm trying to check to make sure that we're okay, all right? And now you're telling me we're about to go into a city and fight the Philistines while somebody's chasing us, all right? And going on, it says, we'll be afraid how much more than if we come to Keilah against the armies of the Philistines. Now, let's jump down to verse 7, and see why they might think this. So if you go to verse 7, it kind of sums it up, and it says, and it was told Saul that David was come to Keilah, and Saul said, God hath delivered him into my hand, for he is shut in by the entering into a town that hath gates and bars. All right? They probably know the city. It didn't give us a description of the city in verse 3. They probably know what that city is, and they know if they go into this city, now they're almost like a sitting duck. All right? We can go back through history as many times as you want, and if anybody in here is military, they know how the military works. You don't want us fight a two-sided front. You can go look at any of the wars. Whenever you get in a two-front war, guess what? The odds of you winning are not very high. Okay, so if they go into a city where they're going to be trapped in, where Saul and his men could come and encompass around that whole city, entrance and exit, now you're a sitting duck sitting there. Okay, not an ideal situation. I'm going to be honest, I'd probably have reservations as well. In my personal self, I would probably have a reservation about coming into the city. All right, so they tell David this. David is taking this information in, right? David is also human. Why does it show that David's human? He's sitting here listening to his men. He knows what the Lord has told him and he's ready to go. He goes and tells his men, we're going into Goliath. We're going to take this city back. And he hears all this rebuttal from his men, right? It is clear that David second-guessed what was going on as well. He shows us that he is human just like all of us. The great leader David, the man that killed Goliath, is sitting here and now he is human just like we are. How do we know he's human just like we are? Because in verse 4 he prays to the Lord again. He didn't just listen to what he said the first time and say, no matter what y'all say, we're going. What does he do? He goes back to the Lord and asks him one more time. He second guesses it as well. He second guessed what the Lord told him to do because he was sitting there looking at his men. He knew what the city was and maybe he thought what? They may be onto something. You know, they may be telling the truth here. Maybe I didn't think this all the way through when I first prayed and he said this and it was gung-ho, let's go. Right? Maybe I might need to revisit what I was thinking and what the Lord told me just to make sure I understand that he was clear when he said, go to the city. Alright? So then David shows us here in verse 4 that he is human and he is just like everyone else. Make sure I get all my notes covered. Alright? Now verse 4 it says, then David inquired of the Lord yet again, and the Lord answered him and said, arise, go to Keilah, and we will deliver the Philistines into thine hand. So, all I can think about now is when we second guess, what's that game we play? We live in the world of what ifs. Into the world of what ifs. If we live in the world of what ifs, guess what we're not living in? Faith in the Lord Jesus Christ when He has answered us and told us something to do. If we're going to sit here and say, well, what if we go in there and Saul and his men come? Well, I'm not having faith in the Lord that He's going to take care of me. Okay? Well, what if we get down there and it doesn't go as what He said? I don't have faith in the Lord of what's happening. You know what we're still doing when we live in the world of what ifs? We're still lacking. We're lacking faith and we're lacking wisdom. Right? We're not full of what the Lord is telling us right there. We can't live in the world of what ifs. Right? If we live in the world of what ifs of doing what the Lord has told us, then we're not truly being faithful. And we have to be faithful. Right? David could have continued to live in the world of what ifs and not gone. But he didn't. What does David do? They arise and they go to Keilah. That's where they go. They have faith in the Lord and that's where they go because that's what the Lord told them. Again, then in verse 4. In verse 5. Alright? So they get to verse 5. Alright? They're no longer living in the worlds of what ifs. It's our job to trust what the Lord tells us and to act on what the Lord puts on our part. So as a leader in this community, if we see something that is not right, alright, and the Lord moves on us to do something about it, we can't live in the world of what ifs of, well, what if this gets me in trouble with so and so? What if this looks bad in their eyes? What if I take ridicule over this? You know, I mean, we're currently living in a time and in our church right now where, I mean, we're not blind. People are trying to slam our church left and right now. Right? I've never once questioned on where I need to be or what this church does right. But if we want to live in the world of what ifs, guess what? We're going to start second guessing a lot of things. All right, so we can't be there. We got to trust that the Lord has everything in control and faithfully go and do the work that He has called us to do and to continue to do what He says to do. That's what we do. So then in verse 5, what does David do? So David and his men went to Goliath and fought the Philistines and brought away their cattle and smote them with great slaughter. So David saved the inhabitants of Keilah. He did what the Lord said. They go to Goliath. They saved the city. Now they're these big heroes. I don't believe David went down there to be a hero. That's what everybody's going to see him as. But I don't believe that's why he went there. He went there because that's what the Lord said. You know what else David did? David's a great leader. David did what all leaders do. There was a problem brought to his attention. The Lord told him to handle it. He went and handled it. Right? And he led his men in there. Right? He took his men into that battle. Right? On the faith of the Lord. I guarantee his men knew that he had the faith. Right, and that this is where the Lord wanted him to go. I had a question in here in verse 5. I had to ask the pastor about this because I don't know if it's because I'm a teacher, but you get on something and you want to know all the ins and the outs of it to make sure that you're accurately presenting it to the kids, because I don't know if y'all have ever taught a bunch of kids. They will let you know real quick if you are not correct. Okay? They will let you know real quick. All right? They will point out the most minute detail, all right, and then harp on it that you were wrong. So when it said in here, they brought away their cattle. Scratching my head, and I was like, Pastor, what cattle did they take away? Did they steal the cattle from Kalah? Is that what it is? I mean, it says, obviously in the sentence, it's showing that they took it from the Philistines. Where did the Philistines get it? They just robbed Kalah. Did they just take their cattle and then they took it with them? You know, and you got to thinking about this. Obviously, they probably brought some with them, all right, or they could have robbed other places. It was 12 miles. All right, that the Philistines had to come to get there. All right, they could have robbed some other places along the way, but it's clear that he took the Philistines' cattle. That's the cattle that they took. So not only did they go do God's work, now they left with what? They reaped a benefit for being down there as well. Now you got to think, they're on the run. All right, 600 men. I mean, I know how much food it is to feed. I mean, do we feed on Tuesday or Sundays? Yeah, 20 of us. I know how much food it takes to feed 20 of us. I don't know. I don't know if I want to know what it takes to feed 600. You know what I mean? But the Lord is still providing for them as they're going and doing these things, right? So they get the cattle as they leave and come out right there. All right, so again, nowhere in here does it say that Saul and his men made it. Okay, it doesn't tell us that Saul and his men made it. They know they're still looking for him. So the fear they had, which I got to believe they had, I don't know this. This is in my mind of me thinking that the fear that they had of their going into a city that was gated where they could get trapped in and have to fight two enemies at one time, all right, are not happening. They went in and did exactly what the Lord promised to do. Again, I don't know of a time when the Lord's been wrong. It's our job to trust Him. And have faith in what He tells us is going to be right. Brother Jeff, I got to believe that's you're living that example right now, huh? Faith of going out to do the calling of the Lord and the mission work. You know, so it's our job to then go forth and to do that. Now, I want to talk about a couple things of what we may be facing right now in our times, not as the example of what it is that they face. So, the adversities that we may face in our cities and urban areas are violence, crime, poverty, drug abuse, all right, social injustice, all right, and we could probably name some other things that's going on right here around us, okay? But if we see all these things, and remember, our job is to do the right thing, do what's right, all right? So if we see these and the Lord puts it on us and we pray about these things, then we need to go try to help some of these. All right, to do it. I know all of those may not be prevalent right around this little rural area where we live, but I can assure you as I'm standing here, drug abuse takes place regularly. You know, and that may be a thing that we need to address. Whatever it is we need to pray about for the Lord to put on us, those are some of the issues that I know we're going to deal with right now. I mean, how many people around us are not saved? Right? That could be one of the issues that's going on. All right, I believe when there's more unsaved people, that's where some of this stuff takes place, you know, and moves into. All right. So David's unwavering faith and commitment to his mission, this is the part that really got me, that his unwavering faith and commitment to his mission served as an inspiration. All right. Us too as leaders in all the areas we just talked about things, we're also going to face doubt. Right? We're going to face doubt, insecurity when adversity strikes us because we're human. And if we try to handle it on our own, we're going to fail. All right? But the resolve and the faith and reliance on divine guidance can empower us to then empower what? The followers and the people that we're trying to impact. no matter what the issue is. All right? But that's what we can do as leaders in this community. No, big thing that stuck out to me is no matter what your job title is or what you do, we are all leaders here. And if the Lord calls upon you to move, then we should move. Not be worried, not live in the world of what ifs, but move on what the Lord calls us to do. All right? I have a little more time right here before we get done, so I'm going to try to give y'all an overview of the rest of verse 20 or chapter 23 that goes through. Because it kind of lays out of what we're talking about, living in the world of what ifs. So the people of Keilah, David comes, saves Keilah from the Philistines. But guess what? Those people betrayed David. You know why? Because they were that scared of Saul. They were that scared of Saul, they betrayed David. And told Saul everything they needed that he needed to know. So David and them left. They went to the wilderness of Ziph. Is that how you pronounce that wilderness? Good. All right, good. We'll call it that. Looks good. Ziph it is. All right. And that lays between Hebron and the Dead Sea. All right. While they're in Ziph, Jonathan came to visit. All right. Let's look at verses 17 through 18 right here. And it says, "And he said unto him, Fear not, for the hand of Saul, my father, shall not find thee. And thou shalt be king over Israel, and I shall be next unto thee. And that also Saul, my father, knoweth. And they two made a covenant before the Lord, and David abode in the wood, and Jonathan went to his house." That's the last time David and Jonathan are going to see each other. But what does Jonathan tell him right here? He will be the next king of Israel. When if you think about it, Jonathan should be the next one in line. It would be easy for him to be like, what is going on? Why am I not the next one? But Jonathan is telling him right here. And he also told him that Saul would not what? Basically wouldn't get him. All right? So now, they're in the wilderness. Now the Ziphites, what do they also do? They also are so scared of Saul that they betray David and his men. All right? And they tell Saul about him. All right? So David and his men, then they leave and they go to the desert of Maon. All right? Assuming I got that close. All right? So now they're in the desert. All right, Saul, he pursues David there, all right, and they're in that mountain, okay, here, and then I find it hilarious, all right, I shouldn't say hilarious, but I find it amazing, the Lord's still working. What does the Lord do? Again, remember we talked in the beginning that Saul is so consumed with getting David that he pulls his own men away from cities to protect them. What does he do? He gets a message when he's there. This says what? The Philistines has invaded his cities. So what does that mean Saul does? Saul leaves again. Leaves David alone. All right. David escapes. Again, having faith in the Lord, the faith has delivered David yet again. All right. And takes Saul to go fight the Philistines. All right. And then David and his men, they leave there and they go. And chapter 24 ends with them being in En-Gedi. All right, so if they're in En-Gedi, that's where then verse 24 would pick up. But if you, the whole thing of David here is he's always doing what is right. He does what the Lord calls him to do, but he is also human and has a couple of what-if moments, but in the end does and lives by the faith of the Lord to continue on to do what the work it is the Lord has him to call. It's easy for us to see going through these stories of who the real leader of Israel is. Who is the one truly taking care of Israel even though he's on the run for his life? It's David. That is a baffling concept for my small brain to comprehend. That while on the run for your life, you are still taking care of your people. That is baffling. So no matter what comes up in our life, no matter how big or how small, we always have the choice to do the right thing and take care of the situation as they arise. We lack. We all lack. We need to call on the Lord on all our situations and be faithful and trust and do what the Lord has called us to do. Here's an example from David. Thank you. Let's bow our heads.